Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We start our program today with the Dakota Political Junkies. Today, we welcome first up Dana Ferguson with the Argus Leader, Argus Leader Media. You can find her work at argusleader.com. Dana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
We've got Denise Ross joining us here in just a minute. We'll give her a couple seconds to make the connection. And Dana, you were in Pierre and now you're back in Sioux Falls. Is that correct?
I'm actually still in Pierre, if you can believe
it. You're still in Pierre. How long? Tell us a little bit about just your plan as far as covering the session in January. How often do you go back and forth?
Oh gosh, it can depend, but I spend most of the legislative session out here in Pierre, going home occasionally for weekends to go see some of the local legislators there as they go to legislative coffees and that sort of thing. Usually I'll spend a couple weeks and then go home for a couple days and come back to Pierre and do it all over again a few times during the couple months of legislative session. So it was a bit of a taste of that this week as we came back for the governor's budget address, just getting back into the swing of things. It's a lot more decorative now. They have all the Christmas trees up at the Capitol, so it smells way better.
All right, so let's get, for folks who have never, watched SD.net or SDPB's coverage of the State House, how are reporters treated in that context? Where you sit and, what are sort of the rules behind the scenes to sort of get the news that you need?
It can vary a little bit in each of the legislative chambers. At the front, there's a little sort of press pin that we all get to sit in. So we sit up there. It's like a nice desk for everybody that comes out to cover a session. In addition to that, there are some spaces for lobbyists and visitors and journalists and everyone that are on the side of either chamber. There are areas that journalists and others are not allowed to step foot in. There are hallways that are designated just for legislators on either side, or at least on one side of each chamber. On the whole, legislators are pretty open to us as journalists. We don't have some of the same Information Act laws that other states have, so we can't get at their emails or that sort of thing, but in general, they're pretty easy to talk to, pretty open to speaking with us about the legislation they're working on, and that definitely makes our jobs easier.
Let's bring Denise Ross into the conversation. Dakota Political Junkie Denise Ross joins us from Rapid City. Denise, welcome as well.
Glad to be with you.
Let's get into the heart of the governor's budget address then, Dana and Denise. And Denise, let's start with you. There was some foreshadowing before the governor even gave this annual address about we might have to tighten our belts a little bit. Tell me how they sort of set this up so that you have the reasonable expectations going in to the state budget address.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of been the theme of Dennis Dugard's governorship that the budget has just kind of been the bane of his tenure, but because he inherited when Mike Rounds left office and he took over, if I recall right, there was a 50 some million dollar shortfall, and he's just been dealing with this, and he's so frugal and careful with money that it's almost like he was made for this time in a way. If you're a fan of his frugality, there are others who think that he goes a little too far in tightening the purse strings, and they would like him to spend a little more. Obviously, the education groups, we've heard a lot from them. There are others out there. Now we're hearing from the state employees. But you've been hearing for months from the legislative end of things, and that's run by the same party, the Republicans, as the governor's office. And so they do work in concert together, and the message has been coming out with the revenue estimates, state sales tax reports coming in that things are down. And so I don't think there were too many surprises yesterday.
Dana, would you like to give us an overall, some of the highlights? What stood out to you as you watched the governor give his address?
Yeah. Well, I would definitely agree that no one was all that surprised by just how tight the budget's going to be, that things aren't looking great for the current budget year. They're going to have to fill some holes there. There is a plan that the governor has to do that, and he laid that out yesterday, sort of pointing to the reserve funds, different other special funds that he's suggesting that lawmakers pull a little bit from each of those to make up for that roughly $34 million gap in revenue and in additional expenses more than they were anticipating for this current budget year. Other things that stuck out, I think there was just a sense from the governor, from lawmakers in the chamber, that it's just not a lot of exciting news. They're just going to have to do the hard work to decide what the state needs, what it wants, if the wants are things that it can afford. And it's not looking like there are many things that are going to get paid for beyond what the state has already been doing. There are some little things. Schools have been growing, so they're going to get some additional funding for the next budget year. Medicaid providers will get a little bit more. But beyond that, state employees aren't going to see any sort of raise for the second year in a row. Nothing flashy, nothing fancy coming in the next budget year that we heard about, at least, because they know that revenues are just not doing all that well. And unless something changes, there's just not going to be much money to go around.
Denise, how about you? Highlights that really stood out to you as you listened?
You know, and it wasn't the governor's speech that got my attention. It was the Democrats' response to it, which came out in a press release. And I didn't see a whole lot of play to it, but they highlighted the economic growth or lack thereof of South Dakota in the last quarter of for that we have data for. South Dakota was only one of two states that's economy shrunk. Iowa was the other one. And so they're pointing the finger at Republican leadership and peer. You know, it raised a lot of questions for me of how much of this is ag-related. You know, there's a lot of corn grown in Iowa. There's a lot of corn grown in South Dakota, but we're not the only states that have that big of an ag economy. So why were we the only two who shrank? How much of this has to do of the revenue shortfall, not necessarily the economy, has to do with these online retail sales? And how does the recent deal that the state struck with Amazon figure into this revenue picture? I haven't seen a lot or anything really about how that's going to affect revenues going forward and how much that might boost the state's bottom line. And so to me, I just think there's a lot of questions here in digging in about why this revenue shortfall, how much of it is, you know, corn prices and how much of it is are other factors. I saw the cost of health care cited in an article. And Dana, maybe you can help me understand this. Are they saying that people are spending more on their health care so they don't have enough money to go out shopping and eating in restaurants and that sort of thing? Or is there some other factor there?
That is exactly what the governor was saying, that the cost of health care has increased for consumers. And so where they might want to go out to dinner or go shopping or something else, they might not have that money available as a result of health care prices going up. I mean, that's kind of a new argument for him to be making. He also cited low inflation as a reason that the state's revenue has been lagging, but it just combines to mean not the best news for the state's collections. And I think that was the feeling of that, and the reality of that was pretty relevant, or you could very easily see it there. One legislator, before the address even started, came up to the press tent and said, oh yeah, you know, we're not going to have Christmas this year. The Grinch stole it, just sort of alluding to how bad things are. But despite that, the governor reflected on years back when he started that were a lot harder for budgeting, and there won't be any cuts. Which is a good thing, I would guess. But it's not going to be an easy year for appropriators, that's for sure.
But I just want to follow up a little bit more on Denise's point, because I pulled up the press release from the Democrats here on my laptop, and they specifically say, and I'm quoting, the governor's address was long on the details of the challenges facing the state in slow revenue growth, but short on the details of what, if anything, he might do to promote economic development and growth. And that feels like a shot across the bow for the campaign for 2018, doesn't it, Denise?
Oh, it definitely felt like that. I mean, they talked about time for a new brand of leadership, and they were definitely positioning themselves. And they didn't talk just about last quarter's economic growth. They talked about going back years and quarter right. over quarter, and there were three successive quarters where I can't remember if we shrank or we didn't grow or whatnot, but I think they've been digging into the data, it sounds like, over at the Democratic offices, and they are very optimistic about their candidate, Billy Sutton, who is an impressive individual. I've had a chance to hear him talk to a group, and I think they have reason to be optimistic about that. And if the planets line up just right here in South Dakota, you know, maybe this is the year for them.
What do you think, Dana? Is that a fair play from the Democrats at this point to sort of paint with that broad of a stroke as we're looking at a difficult ag economy? I mean, is this a leadership issue?
I guess I don't know if they have any other play. In speaking with House Minority Leader Spence Hawley, too, he said there needs to be sort of a renewed look at the way that South Dakota gets its revenues if we're really doing that in an effective way or taxing the right things. He said he's not looking for an income tax, which just certainly would not gain any sort of traction in the supermajority Republican state house. But he suggested doing sort of a blue ribbon task force to look at where does revenue come from in South Dakota, and is there a way to better collect it or to tax certain things that are being used more often, or drop some of the existing exemptions. And that just really did not seem to take off with the governor, with Republicans, who said, you know, they're doing enough in their own opinion to bolster economic growth, to be inviting to companies, to different ag organizations that might want to start up here. But again, I'm not sure that the Democrats had any other argument really to make, looking at the fairly bleak economic picture here.
Denise, my favorite quote of the day was Speaker Mark Mickelson talking with SDPB's Lee Strubinger when he said, you know, we have to do some things, but we have to do them without money. So when we talk about spurring economic growth, is it possible to get creative in that way and do some things that just plain aren't in the budget?
You know, nothing comes immediately to mind on that. I think we've all had experience with that in our own lives, personal lives, of trying to accomplish things without a lot of resources. But, you know, there is another question that I had. And the last time I checked, and it may have changed, but there is a state law about the school funding formula that says the legislature will fund the schools, will increase the per student allocation for schools by the rate of inflation or some other factor, whichever is less. And I don't know legally if the schools have a case to challenge this budget where they say zero increase for the per student allocation when there's a law in the books that says, you know, you will increase it by at least a little bit every year. That's something that I don't know the answer to that. I apologize, but that's something right. that came to mind when I was reading the coverage of this.
Dana, you have things that you're looking forward to that sort of have piqued your interest here to say, you know, we need to find out more about how this is going to play out.
I think earlier in the day yesterday, the Committee on Appropriations took up teacher pay as an issue. The districts that fell short of those projected teacher pay raises set up by the 2016 laws and decided, you know, there are 11 districts that didn't quite make it to those targets, so they're going to have to go back in and renegotiate contracts before February. So that's not a lot of time. And for some of those districts, it's tens of thousands of dollars they were not planning to spend this year, next year, any year, that they're going to have to put into teacher salaries. Lawmakers were frustrated to be put in that position. They didn't feel like they had any good options yesterday. The alternative was pulling half of their new sales tax revenue that's been billed just for teacher pay. So I would anticipate we're going to hear a lot more about the funding formula, a lot more about whether it's appropriate to set those projections at 85% of that target, and if they miss it, to have those as the only penalties. It was an interesting meeting to sit in on yesterday, and it sounds like there's room for some debate about to what degree those laws were written effectively and if they're being enforced in the way that legislators really wanted.
Hmm. Denise, one of the things that the governor addressed very briefly and then moved on from was the sale of the Star Academy. That's in your neck of the woods. Some local lawmakers have gone back and forth on whether or not they believe it should be sold, and kind of crying out for more state money for juvenile justice services in their communities. Do you see any traction gaining with that conversation?
It's hard to say. I think we'll have to watch that as the session goes on, but of course the state hasn't been able to sell that facility, and it's hard. I mean, there may be somebody out there. It's hard to imagine, if you've been down there, this kind of sprawling campus, these old, frankly old buildings, it's old infrastructure. I'm sure there's been upkeep over the years, but it's, you know, you're still starting with an old building, and what use that could be put to now, and whether that would provide juvenile services. It certainly isn't in anybody's community. It's not even in the Custer community. It's nearby Custer, but it's not in town. And so how that would factor in, I just couldn't say. But
the rumor has a beautiful resort. You don't see that?
That might be the use for that. It is a beautiful area. It's a beautiful setting. Again, you have the old buildings, and how do you transform old buildings that cost a lot of money? So who knows? Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful. That would be great.
Dakota Political Junkies, Denise Ross and Dana Ferguson. You can find Dana's work at argusleader.com. Both of you, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.